You're listening to the Tech Gaming Podcast, episode 10-9. I'm your host, Robert Desert Eagle Allen. With me tonight, promising all sorts of game impressions and a field report on the state of indie theater, is our own Sage Samaraj Morris Green.
Hello.
Spending Nintendo points like a drunken sailor this week is our beloved Eric Blue Swim.
Somebody say sailor? I'm sure somebody said sailor. Sailor?
Sailor. Moon.
You know where any sailors are?
Gross.
I'd like to find some sailors.
Rounding out the crew, fresh from the sun-drenched lands of California, is Mr. Jeremy Lamont, a.k.a. The Lawman.
Anybody for a game of lucky hits?
And you'll notice someone missing tonight, Mr. Sean Nola Kirkland, who got called in late to work. So, poor Sean. He'll be with us next week, though.
Aw.
Yeah. But he is with us in spirit now.
Yes. So, Sage, I understand you're in a hurry.
A little bit. Do you want to know why I'm in a hurry?
Yeah, tell me why.
Because tonight, a bunch of friends are in from out of town, and we're going to be doing a, 8-person Halo 1 LAN party at my house.
Ooh. That's a respectable reason to miss. Right? Okay. So, do you have it all hooked up and everything?
Yeah, we got crossover cables, we got piles of chips and dip, we got Mountain Dew and Dr. Pepper. Should be a good time.
Prizes for the winner?
No, the prize is the gloating. I mean, you get to brag. Bragging rights.
Right.
You buy any bags of gamer grub?
Oh, that shit's nasty.
I know.
That's a thing? What is that?
You force feed the loser.
What is gamer grub?
They're these little round, crunchy things that are they're supposed to not leave residue on your fingertips so you can eat them. And they come in really nauseous flavors like pizza and peanut butter and jelly and wasabi vomit.
It's like disgusting hamster pellets for neckbeard people.
Yeah. Yep.
That's gross.
So you should go to your local store and buy some.
Mm-mm.
They're a sponsor. Anyway.
Is the Mountain Dew Halo 3 branded, whatever the hell that crap was? It was awful.
Oh, yeah. That stuff was terrible. Have you seen the Mountain Dew Arctic Blast or whatever? It's probably just Fresca in a bottle, but it looks like alien semen or something. It's terrible.
Oh, God.
Right?
Wow.
It'll probably taste just as good.
Speaking
of, tell me what
I was just going to say. Speaking of, I still fail to understand why in Diablo 3 someone approved the spirit, you know, counter orb for the monk, because it looks like swirling jism, and I don't understand who let that go through the art department. Like, who decided that that was what it should look like?
I don't know. Some repressed individual. I got to see it. Now,
well, those monks, they take a vow of celibacy. They got to do something.
Yeah. See it on the screen. So tell me what you've been playing.
The only thing I've had time to play, because I've been doing photography stuff for my show, is Lone Survivor, which is that sort of more independent game that got thrown into the Humble Bundle late.
Okay. Remind me about that one. I probably have it. Probably did not play it.
It's the one where it's zombies and it's 16-bit. And the guy who made it used to be like a techno, used to be an electronic music artist, so he also made the whole soundtrack, which is really good for the record.
Okay.
It's pretty good. I'm not far enough to know that it will play out well. My brother is not a singer of praises, and he swears that it's one of the best games he's played. So I have...
Ever?
He says it's pretty up there. And, it's got a lot of plot points so far set up that could go somewhere really interesting. Mm-hmm. But as of right now, it's really hard to say if it's going to go sort of a more cliche route or actually an, you know, honest, genuine, interesting route. But the controls are simple, which is cool. And they're not, you know, your standard WASD controls, which is interesting, but they're not confusing. So even though it's not quite the normal, like, PC map out, it's mm-hmm. still easy to control. You walk around, there's some sort of infected, you know, there's zombie type things, but you don't really get your character who you're controlling is sort of talking to himself, and you don't really get a clear idea of what these things are, just that an outbreak of infection started, and you keep having these memory overlaps where, like, you're not really sure when you are in time, because you walk into a room and, like, people are partying, and then you'll walk outside and you'll walk back into the room and there's, like, decaying bodies on the ground of those people, and they've clearly been there a while. So it's set up in like a amnesia, you know, eternal darkness, some sort of crazy, maybe not kind of way.
Right. So did your brother like the gameplay or the story, or not the story, but that element? Yeah. Okay.
I mean, and the other thing is that, you know, doing different things does actually change how the story plays out. And so he played through it, I think, 2 or 3 times and actually got, you know, significantly sort of different outcomes. And compared it to being as good as sex. So, and that's high praise for him, because he's not a nerdy guy who like doesn't get out much. I mean, he's got a lot of ladies around him, and not to
maybe he's
not
got too many if he's comparing.
He's not like a slut muffin. I'm just saying he has an active life. Therefore, that comparison actually holds some weight to it.
Wow. Okay.
So he's a fan of the genre then, or?
You know, he's not usually, actually. He likes some survival horror when it's, like, intelligent, but he's not a huge survival horror buff.
Well, I meant the sex genre. I was trying to figure out, you know, when someone reviews, you got to figure out if they know what they're talking about. So if he's
right.
Carry on. I'm just kidding.
IRL, yes. Game-wise, hentai game-wise, we leave that to Sean Noah Kirkland.
He's going to be so mad when he edits this.
I'll never be mad.
You've been playing anything else?
I've played some Halo, but
Halo better than sex?
No, of course not. Yeah. It's just
why
good old fashioned.
Why has nobody thought of doing that as a review metric before now? I mean, that's really isn't that kind of what we need to know?
As good as sex, not as good as sex, better than sex. That's the
I'm
metric.
Saying, you know what? If you really want to stand out on Metacritic, Robert, you got to get on it.
But how many games are better than sex, though?
Like 4.
You know what?
But, you could also have like you could also have like the lower mid standard that's good as a fleshlight.
Drunken sex.
This is it. We need to stop talking about this because you're gonna let you don't want this to get out. This is gonna be it for you.
Okay. This is my claim to fame.
So let me ask you,
the new
Sage,
benchmark, the new rubric in play today.
That's terrible. So,
Sage, I think you mentioned that this is I think you mentioned that it was a 2D kind of a flat 16-bit sort of style. The game itself, though, it plays like kind of like a what is it more like old school Resident Evil? Is it limited ammo? I know you have an inventory in that game. What's the experience actually like?
Yeah, you have an inventory. It's semi-realistic. Like, you'll find cans of food, but you can't actually eat them until you find a can opener. And if you can't cook anything on the stove until you go and find a gasoline and a saucepan and everything. Mm-hmm. Or not gasoline, propane, sorry. So it's semi-realistic. There is ammo that you have to get,
You shoot more than once every 20 minutes?
Yeah, you can shoot more than once every 20 minutes, but it does actually take a fair number of shots to kill the zombie things, and you can sort of aim two-dimensionally, but you can aim up or down and determine where you hit them. So obviously body shots, it's going to take more hits to kill. Don't make that dirty, Robert. Jesus.
I was just laughing. God.
Shots to the body of the zombie take more shots to kill the zombie than if
that's
you shot
the head. That's neat, not, yeah. Mm. So it's there's like scarcity. I mean, I've heard people say, and I guess I was trying to work my way around to this, is that it's got kind of like a I think we've been complaining a lot lately about where is survival horror, and Resident Evil isn't scary, and
turning to action games.
Yeah. I mean, even things like The Last of Us. You know, it's kind of one of those, like, it's not really going to be scary, but there's these zombie things. And I guess I'm wondering if you from this game, from Lone Survivor. I mean, it's got Survivor in the title. Does it harken back to some of those old survival horror games?
I think it does a decent job. I think that it tries to employ, and it doesn't do so much in every area that it becomes overcrowded, but it tries to employ the element of, you know, not insanity, but, you know, you're not quite sure what the mental state of your character is and what's going on, and that, of course, puts you on edge a little bit. It really uses sound really well, which I'm really big on, so it does a good job of affecting creepy noises for these things, so you hear them before you even see them. Which is still terrifying. I mean, it's not as terrifying as Amnesia, and I think the only reason is because I think it's a little harder to immerse yourself in a flat 2D thing and actually feel connected to, like, you are the character, as opposed to Amnesia, where it's, you know, first person run around.
And I've heard there's kind of a hiding mechanic where if you can't take something on directly, you can sort of wait and see if it will pass. Is that, did I hear that correctly?
You did, and it's not, I would say that it's not. What helps it stay away from the action thing is, I mean, you can shoot them, but you would run out of ammo. If, like, I haven't run out of ammo because I play intelligently. And I think that that's a trend that the market is going back towards, which I'm really thrilled about. Like, to me, the low point of gaming was sort of the Fable 2, Fable 3 kind of era where everything was so stupid proof for you that, like, your two-year-old could play it. And and now I think it's getting, I think Fable's stupid easy. I mean, maybe not the first one.
I'm going to stick up for Fable 2. But Fable 3, yeah, was garbage.
I mean, the glowing trail bullshit and the like, wait, we'll show you exactly where to go and tell you exactly what to do. Like, that kind of stuff is really stupid. And then The Witcher started to move back away from that. Witcher 2 was very like, no, you have to figure things out. Mm-hmm. And Dishonored is coming out where you actually have to play cleverly, even if you are playing, like, you know, the brutal style where you want to run around and shoot people, you still have to be clever about it. And this game, too, if you run around and just shoot everything, you're going to run out of ammo. And sometimes you walk into rooms where suddenly there's a zombie. And so those rooms, it's a lot harder to, like, hide in, you know? So you're better off being clever and finding places to hide. And, like, you can put meat down and they'll run towards the meat and then you can hide and get around them.
Sounds like BioShock.
Kind of, yeah. So if you just take the time to sort of play a little more cleverly, then it's not that hard to parse out your inventory items. Whereas if you don't care and you just run around like a chicken with your head cut off shooting everything, then I think you would find it actually pretty difficult to proceed.
And so I have one last question. So what is the motivating factor? I mean, it sounds like you can do a lot of interesting things, and they've put a lot of thought into how you interact with the world. But what drives you as a player to go forward? I mean, is there a time limit? Are you trying to accomplish a particular thing? Or what is it that is – because it's not linear, right? I mean, you can go wherever you want to in this.
You can. It does suck you in because there are things you'll find in rooms where he'll – so you find a map – and he'll mark things down on the, like, your character is talking to himself, which, you know, it makes sense. It's not, like, cheesy or contrived. It makes sense because he's alone, so he's just sort of, like, running through things in his head. Right. And he'll find a map and be like, oh, weird, there's this weird, creepy thing in this room that I think I need to somehow get through, but I don't have any items to let me do that. And so the game builds on itself so that even though you can go wherever you – I mean, you can go wherever you want – but it inspires you to keep going because you're interested to figure out. I mean, from the beginning, you want to know what happened because you do. And so, and every day he gets up and he has a diary and he has a radio. So the diary tells you his perspective of what you've done the day before. And the radio, you can search different frequencies to see if there are anybody, like, broadcasting things. So then that gives you further, like, where I'm at right now, it's like, okay, I need to go downstairs in this apartment building that I'm in. But I heard over the broadcast that there's some guy in this one room who may or may not, you know, be a good guy who could help me. And so I can choose. I can, like, ignore him entirely and just go downstairs, or I can find a way around all the zombies to get there and then, you know, move on from there.
Interesting.
So it definitely piques your interest and keeps you intrigued because it comes up with all these different things.
Speaking of internal dialogues, did you play Max Payne 3?
I did not.
Okay. I really liked his internal dialogue and conversations with others, and I was having a discussion this week. Other people thought it was kind of cheesy.
Was it anything?
And I thought it was much better than the first game.
It seems like it would be hard in Brazil to be talking about, like, it was cold as a witch's teat on the, you know.
He doesn't do that. It's more modernized. The metaphor is not so campy.
If you make it work, it's just stupid when they, like, half campy, half serious, and then you're like, I can't take this.
See, I thought it really worked. I just thought the writing was spot on. So,
well, I haven't played. I don't know about Max Payne 3 because I haven't played it.
I'm a fan.
I'll play it just for you.
I've noted. Yeah, I think you'll like it.
Okay.
So Blue, you're up next.
Hey, that's me. Well, is you recall
what snake doing Mario?
Hey, it's me, and I'm under a cardboard box. Okay, so last time I mentioned that this time I was going to talk about the Super Famicom Sailor Moon S fighting game, and that's exactly what I'm going to do. Basically, for those of you who don't know, it's a typical Super Nintendo era 2D fighter, you know, Street Fighter like. As far as the characters go, you have the five main inner scouts, Chibi Moon, which is the small one, and then the three outer scouts, or three of the four, whatever. And they all have their own different moves. And one thing that I don't quite like about it is, like, you know, with Street Fighter, you have, like, the charge characters and then, like, the quarter circle characters.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with some of the characters, it's like a combination of the two. Like throwing the tiara will be the quarter circle forward, but doing, like, a crying headbutt attack is, like, holding down and then pressing up and the punch button to let it go. And
wait, I mean, do you mean crying like they're going like hiyah as they attack, or do you mean crying like they're weeping as they headbutt someone?
Basically, it's like Serena throwing a fit and just kind of and, you know, just letting her cry shatter the earbuds of whoever's close enough to her ear or to her mouth.
I'm still confused. Which is it, A or B? Hey, there it is.
But yeah, I mean, it's, as far, you know, it's an okay game, and one neat element about it, and this is something that you really don't see that often in you know, in fighters nowadays,
sure,
much less back then, is an ability customization system. I think it's actually, I think I got the name right. I described the name and it was exactly what the name was. Mm-hmm. It's the ability customization system.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're playing through the story mode, you can have like 10 points if you're playing on normal difficulty, 15 if you're playing on easy, and I believe 5 for expert.
Mm-hmm.
And you can pump up all sorts of different elements about your characters, like your health bar, your attack bar. And I'm trying to think of the best way to describe it. The game has the Sailor Moon equivalent of tripping in Super Smash Brothers Brawl.
Mm-hmm.
Randomly, for no reason whatsoever, characters will fuck up their moves.
Mm-hmm.
And this happens multiple times during a match. It's like Sailor Mars will go to shoot a fireball or something like that, and nothing will happen, and she will stand there, turn to the camera, and get this like pissed off look on her face, like
so it's actually built into the game like that. It's not like somebody messed up the inputs.
Right,
they actually,
yes, yeah, they actually put in, I guess, you know, I guess the wrestling terminology would call it a botch.
Mm-hmm.
You can just screw up a random move for no particular reason. And yes, especially in a fighting game.
Does that end up being interesting, or is that just because I feel like it would be frustrating, or does it serve some sort of comedic purpose?
I think it serves more of a comedic purpose than anything, because,
well,
you know, the characters.
Here's the real question: does it also happen to the CPU players, or is it just?
Yeah.
Really? Okay. Well, then, yeah, see, I'd be a little more okay with that. I mean, if people are messing up all around and it gives you an opening, I mean, that's kind of interesting, I guess.
I guess I'd be a little more into that if it was more like customizable character thing, where you felt like it represented you and you could get into it. Because if I'm playing a fighting game that's other characters, I don't really want to see them screw up. If I want to screw up in a fight, I'll go outside and get in a fight.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, it's kind of, I mean, to me, it felt unnecessary because it happens so often during the match. It's not like with, I mean, it's sort of like tripping in the fact that it's annoying that it's random, but right, happens far more often than it did.
Can you
Brawl.
Fake trip and then, you know, do a reversal? So the person thinks you're tripping, you take advantage of it. You know, the feint.
No, because it's not intentional.
No, but there would be a button for like a faint one, you know, where you fake you fake tripping, and then the person says, oh, here's an opportunity, but you take advantage of it.
That would be a good addition, but as far as I know, it's not in there, and of course, I can't read Japanese, so I can't exactly consult the manual.
Don't know.
Sure.
I'm sure you could look it up on the internet, though.
Now, on the SNES, correct me if I'm wrong, Street Fighter II Turbo is pretty much the benchmark for fighting games as far as animation and playability. How does it compare to that?
Is there
a better game, you guys, on the SNES, a better fighter?
I don't know. I think... For me personally, I prefer Super Street Fighter 2 because it added Cammy.
Okay. Yeah.
Of course.
But yeah, I mean, as far as comparing it to Street Fighter, the animation isn't quite as detailed. It's not quite as solid as Street Fighter 2's, but it's not bad,
right.
But it could have been done better. I mean, the sprites look okay as far as, you know, representing the characters.
Okay.
But
did you ever play Arcana Heart? Arcana Heart?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Or yes, I did. Yes, I did.
How does it compare?
I'd say Arcana Heart by Country Mile. And
Country Mile.
Living in the South, I know a Country Mile is actually more than a mile.
It's the distance between you and the nearest liquor store.
Yeah.
Of course. Okay. So anything else besides Sailor Moon Fighter?
Another thing I've been playing is I picked up Donkey Kong 94 from the 3DS Virtual Console service.
Nice.
And basically, Club Nintendo is ending their calendar year or club year or whatever at the end of this month, and I had some coins that were expiring, and I
That's the fiscal quite... year, right?
I'm not sure. That could be. Mm-hmm.
It's the Mushroom Kingdom New Year.
And I had some coins expiring, and I was looking, I was kind of thinking, do I want to get the Donkey Kong posters? But they, I don't know. I mean, that didn't quite feel like I felt like I was kind of forcing myself to get it. And so I bit the bullet. I only had like about 90 coins that were expiring. So I I figured Donkey Kong's 100 coins. So yeah, screw it. I might as well get that. And if you have a 3DS, are open to the idea of playing original Game Boy games on it, Donkey Kong 94 is an absolute must-buy. Probably along with Mario Land 2, 6 Golden Coins. I mean, this game...
Wait, that's the one that starts with 4 levels of Donkey Kong, and then it goes wildly different?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, okay. That totally threw me off, because it's like, here's Donkey Kong, and I thought they'd continue that, and then all of a sudden, on the fifth level, it turns a corner. And it's something else, and that something else is good, but it's not quite Donkey Kong.
Yeah, it's a Donkey Kong-like substance.
Okay.
And some of you may also know the series as Mario versus Donkey Kong.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of a soulless, cheap imitation of Donkey Kong 94.
Yeah.
And, I mean, for those of you who haven't played it, basically, you know, in addition to the original Donkey Kong, you know, running and jumping elements and the hammer and stuff like that, Mario has the ability to, like, pick up enemies that are walking throughout the stage and throw them at other enemies to knock them out of the level.
Mm-hmm.
You can also swing around on power lines and clothes lines and stuff like that, and kind of do like a gymnastics routine where he's spinning around and around and around and around, and then fling him all the way up towards the stage and, you know, get up to the top and hopefully get through the door. I mean, it's fantastic. I mean, it's kind of one of those things where you have to play it to truly, truly grasp how good it is.
Mm-hmm. True.
I mean, this is one of the Game Boy games that spent a lot of time in my system. And I mean, I've never got that far into it. I think I got as far as the airship. Well, maybe I got about halfway through it, but I never finished it up for whatever reason. Either my save file got corrupted, or I just kind of hit a wall.
Right. Okay.
But yeah, I mean, it's if any of you hear this before the Club Nintendo year ends, and you have 100 points on your account, grab it. It's absolutely worth it. And I mean, normally it's only like $3.99 on the shop channel. So I mean, it's worth it either way.
Yeah, I like how they've been doing the Club Nintendo rewards, where you can actually redeem for actual games on the DS download service or on the Wii. Mm-hmm. I've done a little bit of that. It seems like I really wish they'd promote it more, because actually months have gone by where I forgot to look, and then I missed out on something that I really had, you know, would have liked. But that has been kind of a neat program.
I definitely agree with you, Jeremy. And I just wish that there were maybe multiple games too, because oftentimes I'll have, you know, I've already purchased that, and you know, one option.
You know, and right now, I guess if If you think about it, Nintendo right now is the only one who's doing that. I mean, people have been talking about Xbox eventually rolling out some kind of Microsoft points program based on your gamer score. I think I've heard some of that kicking around, which I think my gamer score is like 1,200 or something. So I'm, you know, not interested in that. But but Nintendo is actually giving you games or giving you the potential to get games for buying their games, which I think is kind of neat of them.
Commendable. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's a nice service. They also had Kirby Superstar for the Wii Virtual Console. And I almost got that, but you know, the announcement of that Kirby 20th Anniversary Collection with the art book and the soundtrack CD, I'm like, oh, I'm going to be double dipping on that in a couple of months anyway, so I'll just hold off.
Tickled pink is what you are. Jeremy, tell me what you've been playing.
Yeah, well, I've been bargain bin diving a little bit. No, these are good games, but I know on Twitter we'll sometimes talk about this stuff, but Best Buy on their way as they're circling the drain, they have been.
Wait a minute.
Throw that away, why don't you?
Pactor says it, that it's going to happen. It's going
to
happen.
Oh, therefore it's going to.
Hey, didn't you know that Best Buy is the showroom for all of the online retailers of the world?
Well, that's true.
Mainly Amazon.
I would be more into Best Buy and be willing to spend my money there because the convenience of being able to go get it instead of waiting for it to get shipped is cool if their like customer service people, and in fact everyone who works there, weren't so stupid, because recently 2 years ago they did away with specialized team members or whatever, where like someone would actually know the department they were in, so now they just have employees in general. So literally the last three times I went there, which are the last times I ever went there ever, like their employees didn't know, and I know more than them about things that I don't even know anything about than any of their employees, which is really pathetic.
See, I'm kind of sad because, what was it, Circuit City went by the wayside. They had some really good deals.
That's the thing. Like, they were doing the same thing about a year and a half before. So, but I actually, speaking of Best Buy, not to get off on a Best Buy tangent or anything, but I've seen articles recently about what can Best Buy do. And I saw a really interesting article on how it's not a super, you know, customer-friendly environment for people to walk into, especially women. You know, that you would think that they would spend a lot of money on their guys or whoever wants the gadgets and things, but you know, you go in there and it's just there's stuff everywhere. Like Sage says, you know, people aren't there, you know, they're not really there to help you. They congregate around the kiosks and things. And I've worked retail, and you know, those places, they don't really spend any money on training or anything, so it's kind of up to you to stand out on your own. So I don't hold it against them specifically, but anyway, so back to the matter at hand. So the Best Buy magazine at Gamer, if you subscribe to at Gamer, or if you happen to have a copy in your.
I always thought it was just called Gamer.
They specifically call it at Gamer. I mean, it's on the magazine. It's at Gamer. I mean, on Twitter, it's just at Gamer. So you'd think it would be Gamer, but I think the magazine is actually at Gamer. In fact, actually, I remember before they had the at Gamer Twitter handle, they actually had AT Gamer. So I feel like it's at Gamer. But anyway, their internal magazine, it's sort of like the Game Informer of Best Buy, so to speak. Well, it is, right? It's there.
No, I'm laughing because there's one guy who over Twitter just periodically tells me that Game Informer is like the best game ever. And today he messaged me because there was some interview with the Call of Duty guys.
It's the best magazine.
Yeah, that for that interview makes it the best magazine ever.
Well, the neat thing about the At Gamer magazine that Game Informer does not do is they have some really lucrative coupons in there.
Yes.
Right. So, and the thing is that even if you look at it to begin with, so they generally will run a coupon that goes for an entire month, and you might see something in there that's, you know, $15 off a $40 or $50 game, which, you know, isn't bad, but you can almost hang on to the end of it through the period of that coupon.
Yep.
And recently, anyway, you've been able to get some pretty decent stuff for under $10, $10 or less. I mean, $5. I picked up a copy of Dragon Age 2 for $5 a few weeks ago. And that's where I am.
Deadliest Warrior for a penny.
Yeah, right. And the funny thing about Robert's story is that it was actually less than, but they can't actually transact something out and give money. So they had to charge him something. So he gave him a penny.
No, some people got it for free.
Is that right?
Yeah. And well, I was overcharged.
Yeah, that's what happened when Lou had told me about that Dissidia guide a while ago, and I just walked in, and they're like, a penny? And I'm like, well, could I just have it? And they're like, sure. So, anyway, so what I picked up recently from the AntGamer coupons, a couple of things, but the one that I've been playing recently is the new SSX game, which SSX, of course, is the what does it stand for? Snowboarding
Supercross.
Extreme.
No, there's no extreme. It's like skiing, snowboarding, motocross, or sky.
That would have been a damn good trivia question, though.
It might have been. It might have been. But in this case, they have. I personally never played a lot of SSX. In fact, I was more of a Cool Borders guy. My wife and I played a lot of Cool Borders when we were dating, and so SSX is kind of new to me. But this is—it's kind of curious. SSX to me feels like one of those games that probably should have been out long before now. In this console generation, it's a little bit like Twisted Metal when you realize, gosh, you know, 6 years into the thing, and Twisted Metal just barely came out, or Gran Turismo. Like, aren't those the kinds of things that you would have kind of at launch? So on one hand, it's like it feels like it's a little bit kind of late to the party, but on the other hand, the neat thing to me about SSX is that it seems to me like EA has learned a lot from some of the other games that they've released this gen. It's part of the EA Sports brand, and one of the things that strikes you immediately is they have a really great soundtrack. The music in SSX is and I don't listen to any of that stuff, but it really kind of it's kind of groovy, you know.
When I reviewed it, there was the occasional clunker. I'll give you 80% of it's pretty good, but there was some clunkers in there.
That's not bad. I mean, in my book, if you can get a good a good soundtrack 80% of the time, you're doing all right. So
Lumineers. Still on
Well, that's true. That has some great music. But when I say EA Sports, I mean I think about it like FIFA or some of those other games where they play music that you might actually hear at a sporting event that really kind of gets you into the mood of like, all right, stadium, we're gonna kick some ass. And so SSX kind of the first thing was I was like, oh yeah, they have some really great music. So kudos to them on that. But the other thing that SSX has I think benefited from are some of the other EA franchises. Skate was one of the new franchises that came out with this generation, and the neat thing about Skate as opposed to things like Tony Hawk were the new kinds of inputs. And SSX gives you the opportunity, if you want to use traditional face button inputs if you want to pull off tricks, but I loved Skate, I really liked the first Skate, decided going to go with the sticks, and it works really well. They actually use the same kind of stick control system where you can do grabs just by flicking your right stick to one side or the other, but you can also do kind of like what the kick tricks were in where you would take the stick up and then kind of rotate it around the side. You can actually grab with opposite hands. You can do, different little tweaks and things.
Did we just get into another dual stick with grabbing with opposite hands conversation? I thought it was only Robert that took that way.
We may have. So if you flick your stick to one side, you can grab the opposite hand and tweak it.
Right.
There's our title.
Nice.
Yeah. So that was another thing that I felt like if SSX had come out earlier, it may not have benefited from that, which at the time I think was a really innovative thing for Skate, of course. The other thing that SSX does that you may have heard a lot about is what they call RiderNet, which is sort of the snowboarding version of the Burnout Paradise Autolog, which I think is also similar things have made their way into Need for Speed games and things like that. But the idea of asynchronous multiplayer. One of the things I don't really like about this SSX game, and I don't know how it was again for previous games, but there's no split screen multiplayer in this. And I don't know if anyone else can. I mean, is that something that's normal for the series?
It's been a couple of years since I played the SSX games.
Yeah, I mean, there are five or six games in the series, and I had actually planned on, maybe playing this with the kids a little bit, since it's rated E for everyone, and was a little disappointed to find out that it's single screen only. It does have online multiplayer, of course, but you're pretty much playing by yourself. But it does have this RiderNet, this sort of asynchronous multiplayer, where you are essentially on this sort of active leaderboard, and it's sort of showing you what your friends have been able to do, and kind of has that same addictive quality of things like Autolog in Burnout. You know, where in Burnout Paradise you would have people who owned a certain street or something like that, and there's a similar idea with this RiderNet. So again, I think that SSX is a better game for some of that. And actually, one other thing that I didn't realize was DJ Atomica, speaking of Burnout, DJ Atomica is, I didn't realize, I had to look this up, but I guess he was previously in other SSX games, and some people don't like DJ Atomica. I actually
I do.
Kind of, I do too. I
it's got a smooth voice, yeah.
Exactly. Good. Sexy Ryan Seacrest voice, you know, coming in.
Wait a minute, back it up.
if you don't have a sexy voice and you're not a DJ, I mean, you know. So anyway, DJ Atomic is there telling you what's going on. But yeah, no split screen multiplayer. And so I'm assuming that most folks have probably played a downhill snowboarding or skating game. So I don't know that we need to talk too much about that. But of course, the idea in SSX are the tricks. And so you basically, the idea of this is that you're going down, different courses, different they're supposed to be realistic. I mean, they set you in the Rocky Mountains, or they set you in, Alaska, or they set you in wherever. And and you can go down the hill and grind on pipes and, whatever foliage or local animal life happens to be there. You can kind of, bounce off a caribou or something. But you build up multipliers and you get to tricky mode and you have unlimited boosts and things like that. So that's kind of neat. But the thing about SSX is now they have this deadly descent idea where as you progress through the game, you come up with, I think it's every region, I believe, has a deadly descent where it's actually, I guess you could call it kind of a survival mode, where as you are going down that course, you may have an avalanche or, a rock slide or the cold can sort of sap strength from you, those kinds of things. And that's kind of neat, seeing how they've incorporated, an environmental effects into that. And some of those challenge modes can get really difficult. But the thing that I like about this as well, I mentioned my kids, and one thing that I found that was neat was that there's not really much of a fail state. I mean, aside from challenges that you can, not pass or some of these deadly descents, even my 3-year-old can carve down, the side of a mountain and actually look pretty cool doing it. And, they may not care that they're not doing all the tricks, but at least I don't have to, help them, dig themselves out of the snow or whatever. And so even though we have to take turns, it's actually been quite a lot of fun.
What system did you get it for?
I got it for the PlayStation and PS3.
Oh,
and
Fuji.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. There's exclusive Mount Fuji content. In fact, in the box, I think it says it's exclusive until August. So for those of you on the 360, I think you have your day with Mount Fuji will come.
Okay. Beautiful, because I just got my copy today.
Yeah, exactly. So you probably in the near future, you'll have a chance to, carve through Japan, I guess. But there are, in the same way that SSX has benefited from some of the developments of previous games, I also feel like there are some, it definitely feels like they have appropriated an older engine for this game. It looks good. The character animations sometimes are a little weird. I mean, you're doing some pretty crazy tricks and things, but sometimes it just kind of looks like a little bit older tech. Sometimes your board will clip through, a pipe that you might be grinding on. Yeah, and stuff. So stuff like that kind of takes you out of it a little bit. Mm-hmm. But
I noticed that too. But I thought if your board got stuck on every little tree and bit of the environment, that would have been really frustrating.
Yeah.
So I always thought they kind of did that on purpose. They just overlooked smaller things.
Well, and I'm sure they thought about it. I doubt they shipped the game and said, "Oh my God, things are clipping through the board." But but still, everything else, it feels so good. It would, it's just those little things. You're like, oh, my board is sticking through that pipe. That's a little janky. And and it's a minor thing, but you kind of notice it. And you, like I said, it SSX is sort of the product of a lot of EA's past games, both for the better and the worse. Some great game mechanics, new things that kind of add to the SSX. Experience, I think, just based on my experience with this game, things that I can see coming from Skate and Burnout and other places. But you can also sort of tell that they're working on some older tech. But I've been enjoying SSX and got it on the cheap. If you have a subscription to At Gamer Magazine, or if there's one in the lobby of your local dentist, you can make for a tenner while it's on sale through the end of.
Are you advocating people pull the coupon out of the dentist's office magazine?
I am saying if that dentist is going to drill things out of your face, the least he can do is give you a coupon from his lobby magazine.
Okay. I was just thinking of the next person.
Yes, yeah. It's his own fault if he doesn't take the damn coupons out before.
That's true. I mean, what's he doing? Yeah, he's a dentist.
For the record, not every dentist is terrible. At my dentist's office, they have like a waterfall thing on the wall that makes soothing noises, and they serve you tea while you wait. And
right. It's just to cover up the screams.
It's true.
It's true. No, my they're very nice.
My dentist is a lot like the one from The Little Shop of Horrors. So he sings and...
You should get a new dentist then, because that guy was creepy and he dies in a halo of his own gas, so...
I suppose that's true.
Back to Halo.
So the other thing that I've been spending a little bit of time on is for those of you who have a PlayStation Vita and who have been lamenting the sort of the dry spell that it's been going through, Sony has done us a little bit of a favor for those of you who have Wipeout 2048 by releasing what are essentially, for most people, and not guaranteed for everybody, but for most people, free add-on packs. There are two DLC add-ons that came out for Wipeout 2048. Was it this week or last week? It might have been last week. And I believe the packs are you know, $9 or $10 each. But if you are an owner of Wipeout HD and or the Wipeout Fury add-on, which if you were a PlayStation Network user in the great outage of Ought 11 last year, they provided Wipeout HD and I think also Wipeout Fury, I think, was also on the list of Welcome Back games in North America. Mm-hmm. So if you had the games previously as I did, or if you got them as part of that offer, you can actually get these DLC add-ons for free. And I don't know if we've talked about Wipeout 2048 on this show previously, so I don't know if I need to go into that too much.
I played it for a little bit, and I don't think I talked about it too much.
Really? Well, let's talk about it a little
bit. Okay.
Wipeout is a little bit weird for me because it's got great music, it's got really interesting tracks. Who doesn't love a futuristic combat racer? but I've never really been very good at Wipeout. There's something about the steering, like you're steering with the tail or something, or you have to be looking ahead. It seems like you really have to know the track a lot more.
Yep.
And so I personally have never really excelled at Wipeout, but it just looks and sounds so good. that I have to forgive it. And Wipeout 2048 on the Vita looks, for my money, it is probably the best looking game on that platform right now. It is, if you've ever seen Wipeout HD on the PS3, I mean, it is basically that game, but on an awesome little OLED screen. And one of the things I like about racing games, and this may be a little bit weird, maybe I'm the only one, tell me you guys if I'm the only one, but I kind of like the idea of racing games that are built on a particular fiction. I'm a big MotorStorm fan, for example, and the thing I like the very best about MotorStorm, I mean, it's a fun racer and all that, but I like the sort of the rubric, the idea that there are all these metalheads that go out to this MotorStorm festival, and they're out there in the desert like Burning Man, like just wrecking shit and doing, you know, whatever it is that they do.
Going off cliffs.
Yeah,
taking
exactly.
Their souped-up cars, driving off cliffs.
Not only taking souped-up cars, but taking their aircraft carriers and, you know, sailing up to wherever and you know, trashing things. And I love that. I love
and
that.
Taking
on the
big rigs and running over people on bikes.
Oh, yeah, they're taking them on helicopters and all. Right. The world is ending, and they're like, screw that. We're going to race some, you know, monster trucks. And I kind of, I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but I love the menu of, you know, like Pacific Rift or something like that, where the menu in the background, you're seeing them like doing donuts in the dark, and there's all the, you know, just this festival going on, and I really dig that. I mean, just this underlying, it has nothing to do with the game itself. I mean, there's really no it may come up in the decorations or some of the other accoutrements, but it doesn't really affect the racing game. But the same thing is true of Wipeout, and I probably just spend a lot of time building something up that's not really that important. But one of the things about Wipeout 2048 is that believe it or not, there is apparently a continuity for the Wipeout series, but Wipeout 2048 is a prequel to the rest of the sort of far future Wipeout series. Wipeout 2048 actually combines more terrestrial, shall we say, kinds of tracks.
Jeremy, I'm about to ask you the relationship of the racing teams, the Fizar team.
There may be. I'm going to go to the Wipeout Wikia right now.
I'm kidding.
I don't know what it is. It's just really weird. But in the opening cinema,
do you have a team that you prefer?
It actually takes me a long time to even get it. I pretty much stick with the first racing, the first vehicle that they stick you with, and I pretty much race that all the way through. But let's talk about that. They actually let you choose different, there are different teams, but basically it's just an excuse to have different configurations of these racing. What do you call these? They're not spaceships. They're like little hover bike things.
Craft, yeah.
Anyway,
pod
so
racers.
Yeah, pod. Okay, pod.
You
yeah.
know that's not far off from the future in real life. The Germans are working on a hover bike right now.
Yes.
Do they have weapons mounted to them?
No, but I'm sure you could mount your own.
Mm, well, they are Germans.
Well, that's true. Anyway.
Well, so in Wipeout 2048, they actually show, you know, they show like an old-fashioned car, like even old-fashioned mm-hmm. by our standards, you know, and it, mm-hmm. you know, they show
morphs,
like this
yeah.
car. Yeah, it evolves, like it builds on these yeah. metal pieces into sort of an F1 car like we've got now. And then suddenly the things are like these sort of futuristic retro like hover mm-hmm. cars. And then they, you know, so the idea about this is that all those crazy tracks in the Wipeout series that are floating over, you know, whatever, generating mm-hmm. power when you race over them, those don't exist. And so you actually have a combination of kind of the futuristic vertical drop mm-hmm. courses, but you're also going through, you know, green areas, you know, parks or, you know, metro, like, you know, current, you know, 2012 city metropolitan areas.
Right.
And you go in and out of those.
I remember reading, this is when the first Wipeout came out on PlayStation, Next Gen Magazine, and they were talking about, I forgot the name of the design company, but the amount of detail that they put in to give it that kind of futuristic, everything from the font to the music to the advertising represented kind of this, you know, this futurist view. And what's interesting is that was probably, I don't know, maybe 95 when the first one came out. I think the first one came out in one of those big boxes. And it doesn't look horribly dated all these years later. You know, that kind of future view, I don't know, it was probably inspired by Blade Runner, a couple other things. But, you know, it still kind of stands up.
Yeah, it's definitely a design heavy, and not in a bad way. It's definitely a design heavy series, and it's, I mean, it's really some like Sid Mead, like you said, futurist sort of stuff. So it looks great, and it looks great on the hardware. The thing that you might have problems with, like me, is you really kind of have to know where you're going. I mean, it's fast. It's sort of you know, F-Zero kind mm-hmm. of speed. I mean, if you ever played F-Zero GX, I mean, it's that kind of... It can get pretty difficult.
I don't think it's that fast.
You don't think so?
No, F-Zero GX was just, like, too damn fast.
Yeah, it really was really fast. Yeah. But the thing about F-Zero GX for me was it was the first game that I think I ever played where the track was where you're going out around the outside of a tube. There was one level kind
of
up the pipe, and I thought that was really cool. But anyway, Wipeout is fast, and it's difficult, mm-hmm. and you crash a lot, and there are weapons. F-Zero never had weapons, but this you can get, you know, missiles and homing devices and mines and just all kinds of things. So it really is a combat racer. And some of the modes are also pure combat modes where you don't even have to worry about hitting the accelerator. You just actually I'm mixing up two different things. There's zone mode where you don't have to accelerate. It does it for you. You just have to steer. Mm-hmm. And then there are combat modes where it doesn't matter how fast you go, just as long as you're the last one to get there. Basically, you accumulate points and things.
Zone mode's pretty trippy.
Yeah, it looks really cool. In fact, that was the thing that made me really want to talk about it this week was how they so actually what I was originally going to talk about were these add-on packs. So I guess for the Wipeout series at large, we've sort of talked about that, but the Wipeout HD add-on and the Fury add-on, they add there were some limited crossover tracks, I think, when Wipeout 2048 first came out. These DLC, though, they add another dozen tracks from the Wipeout HD, and same thing for Fury. They add a lot of content, a lot of backwards tracks, some new racers, things like that.
And a surprisingly small footprint.
Yeah, and it's like, it was really pretty small. The other thing, in case you don't know it about Wipeout 2048, is that it actually has true, actual crossplay with the PS3. So you can be racing on your Wipeout 2048 on your Vita, and you can actually play multiplayer with people who are playing Wipeout HD or the Wipeout HD Fury expansion. And it'll tell you when you play multiplayer, you know what, I can't remember the icon that it uses, but it'll tell you who's playing what, and you don't notice a thing at all. I mean, it's just like it's just like normal multiplayer, and it works really well. And I would say of all the games that have come out so far for the Vita, I'm not sure that there are any that do that cross-play idea better than Wipeout 2048. So if you have Wipeout HD on your PS3, if you have the Fury expansion, spring a few bucks for the Wipeout 2048 game on the Vita, get some DLC. I can't promise you that it's free because it depends on your purchase history, I think, but they're inexpensive for what you get, and like I said, it just looks really good. It's a lot of fun to play. If you get used to the tracks, get used to the steering a little bit, you can really start to master things, but that's just a lot of fun.
Okay. Wipeout.
So, Robert, I don't think we've heard from you. Have you been playing anything the last week or two?
Yes, I have. So let me start. I got a little bit of praise and just a small bit of criticism. So let me start with the good. But back when I was in college, my housemates and I, we really got into the Nagano Olympics game that was put out. I think that was Konami way back in 98. And before that, if you guys can remember, Decathlete and Winter Heat for the Saturn. Those warmed up my Saturn's drive tray. Get it, Winter Heat. Anyway, the Mario and Sonic Olympic games put out by Sega, those were fun, surprisingly good, and especially in a multiplayer environment. But they didn't do a good job at recreating kind of the glory and the spectacle of the games themselves. Like often, you know, you'd spend the evening kind of watching the Olympics, and then when those end, we'd fire up a game to try to, you know, kind of recreate that. And the Mario and Sonic, because they're in this weird kind of cartoony universe, don't really do that as well. So today, I was waiting a few games, Spec Ops and Spider-Man, and FedEx drops off a package, and I rip open the envelope, and I didn't expect to find a shipment of London 2012, so I'm moping around a bit. Yeah, I really wanted to play Spec Ops because I heard that was a pretty engaging narrative. So I'm working for a couple hours, and you know, it's sitting next to me, and I pick up the back of the box, and I look at the screenshots, and I figure that these things cannot be real. I mean, they're just too detailed. Either it's CG, it's Photoshopped, or the game looks like that, but it just animates like crap. And then I see Kinect support, so it kind of worried me a little further. So I put the disc in. I'm curious at this point. And within seconds, I'm shown this overhead stadium shot. And it's a venue that's detailed as any of EA's locales, like either the FIFA or the Madden games. I mean, it looks amazing. And in EA's games, the fans usually cheer in kind of these offset animation routines. They really don't fool the eye. You know that they're a video game. They look good, but something about the fans. In this one, you have thousands of people, and they're all kind of jostling around. And I was immediately kind of intrigued, and I was really surprised. Obviously, a lot of work went into this game. So I played two events, the long jump and the discus throw. And both came with this interactive tutorial that actually has you making the motions before moving on to the next step. So, you know, they teach you really how to play each of the events there. I think there's 45 different events and maybe, I'm going to have to reach for the box, like 15 or 18 kind of main ones. Now this is what I always thought that these games should do. Instead of just telling you, you know, hit this button, the way they're interactive is really beneficial. So I move into an exhibition event, and I find the game did something that I've always wanted an Olympic game to do. They got rid of the really kind of heavy track and field style button mashing to simulate power, which these games do. So like with the long jump, you're still, you know, you're hitting the buttons as you're running towards the pit, but you're tapping the buttons but not beating them furiously. In fact, if you're hitting them too fast, it's just detrimental. So, you know, it's not just a wild wrist injury inducing, you know, kind of thing. It's more you're trying to get a certain speed, a certain rhythm. And then once you approach the line, everything slows down drastically, which I think was just phenomenal. And then you flick the analog stick, which is kind of like a golf game. And the position of the stick determines the angle of your throw. So it's just kind of, you know, you're moving and it slows down appropriately, and you got to match it up with the line. And the linesman looks a lot like Tom Hanks for some reason. I don't know why. So anyway.
Is he really detailed also, or is it kind of?
Not quite as detailed as the athletes, no.
Is there a volleyball with a handprint on it?
No, Wilson's volleyball. Not in the game.
And I have a question too. So is this compatible with the Nintendo Power Pad for the track and field sports? Get down on your hands and knees and cheat and hit it with your hands.
I didn't try that.
No. You should plug it in. See
I didn't even. Yeah, I didn't even plug my Kinect in because it's just sitting there vacant. Which I should because there's a. Speaking of free games, I guess Haunt is free until the beginning of July if you plug your
Kinect in and surf.
And I've been meaning to do that just for a free game, but even a free game can't get me to.
But you just can't care.
Team Cynical.
Did Steel Battalion break you too?
No, no, I played the demo of Steel Battalion. I thought it's interesting, but I didn't get it in. But I probably, I don't know. It didn't compel me enough to ask or even to seek it out. So anyway, Discus is kind of similar. This time you use the right stick. You make a right kind of left, left, right, left motion of the right stick. And each time there's kind of a circle that's dwindling around the athlete. Now, what's interesting, what's smart, is if you screw up doing the warm-up, you can start over without penalty. Because usually a lot of these games, you're locked into this canned animation. You kind of fail out as soon as you do one simple thing wrong. And what was really interesting is it kind of took me a few times to get the feel, but once I got the rhythm, I was doing it consistently and consistently improving the distance I was throwing the discus. So on to the athletes. They're not quite as good as the stadiums. There is, when they're looking towards the sky, there's a bit of jagginess, but they really look great because they have different kind of facial expressions as they're going through their routines. And more importantly, they have different body types. So jumping, you know, is the tall and lanky guy, and the discus is this kind of muscle-bound, you know, tank. Winning an event gives you the national anthem from there's 36 countries in the game. A little short there, but, you know, a good amount there. So it's in front of this cheering kind of animated crowd. And actually, for me, it felt a bit emotional, which is pretty much, I think, the holy grail of an Olympic game. And I know this might sound, you know, like a cheap cash-in, but I think it is an exceptionally just well-executed interpretation of the events, except for the announcer. He kind of repeats himself, but he is very enthusiastic. And the one thing I can't stand, I know some people are going to disagree with me, and it's not a fault of Sega at all, but the god-awful font used for the London Games. It just looks...
I thought you were going to say the mascots.
No,
in there? Do the mascots get to compete, or are they characters?
I didn't see the mascots yet, but I did see kind of the motif of that pinkish purple color, and it looks, at first it looked like crumpled paper, but now as you look at it a little bit more closely, it almost looks like the Polygon logo. But other than those things, it really couldn't have been done any better. I'm really surprised by this, and you know, it's a lot of fun. Like I said, I'll probably plug in Kinect for the full review, but I dig it.
Well, it can never be as good as Epic's Winter Games back in the Apple II. Shout out.
I was more a fan of the Summer Games, the Half Pipe. That was
really
hot. Yeah.
See, I was the hot dog event because I liked hot dogs at the time, and I didn't really realize that it was. Well, I was probably like 5 years old when I was going on the hot dog, and I could get a 10 every time. I could nail that hot dog every time.
There's a joke here somewhere.
That seems like a "that's what she said" kind of moment. But
yeah.
Let's see what you guys are thinking about. I'm talking about the Winter Olympics here.
Yeah, that still seems like a "that's what she said" kind of moment.
No, I did think we talked about this and we ventured into the caveman games where you grab the woman by the hair and you kind of throw
her. We did talk about this. I remember that. You're right.
Like a javelin, yeah.
Well, I just wanted to bring up Epic's Winter Games again. This is the only podcast.
Whatever happened to Epic's?
Epic's Winter Games twice. I don't know. They probably got bought by Broderbund, and who knows where they are now.
Okay. So anyway,
now with the Winter Olympics, does it have any of the real world athletes? Because I know, I think it was Beijing 2008 Olympics.
Right.
It had like several real U.S. athletes, like Nastia Liukin, on the cover of it. But as far as I could tell, they weren't actually in the game. Are there
Blue,
any?
I'm going to let you down. I don't know America's team right now for the field events that I was doing. So they look pretty real.
I honestly don't know. Right? What's his name? The guy who smokes
Phelps.
All the... Yeah,
Phelps.
Nathan Phelps.
Subway. But then I think one of the things is Phelps is in contention in the trials. So they don't know who's going to make it or not. And by the time this game went into production, I'm not sure that they have the actual athletes because they...
No, and I think Ludo would kick Nathan Phelps' ass anyway.
Nathan?
Isn't his name Nathan Phelps?
Michael.
Michael Phelps. Nathan Phelps is his lesser successful
brother. The guy who always looked up to
him. He has barely stunted like our, and doesn't go very fast.
He almost drowned when he was 5 years old. Nathan Phelps.
Nathan Phelps sounds like some crappy ass backup character from Siphon Filter.
Or a used car salesman. Trust me. I'm Nathan Phelps. Anyway, Marvel Pinball 3D. If you read my review for Zen Pinball 3D, you know that this is one of the best eShop games to grace the 3DS. The one caveat that I had is that you really have to play with this game with the 3D slider turned up, preferably at maximum. Otherwise, the tables, the ramps, and all the stuff at the top just turns into a big kind of mess. And turning it on the 3D actually brings all the features out, which is kind of a necessity because the 3DS screen is pretty small. So Marvel Pinball 3D, it likely uses the same engine it brings. It's the same layout as the one that came to console. So you have the Iron Man, you got the Captain America, the Blade, and the Fantastic Four tables. The tables, they're all good with just a few exceptions. I think my least favorite, and it probably should be the most, is the Iron Man table. The voice samples are pretty repetitive. Tony Stark says, what does he say? It's a bit early, but cheers, damn near every time you launch the ball. And he also sounds a bit like Keanu. Not the Tony Stark, I would think. Not the, you know, technological, multi-million.
Robert Downey Jr.
Was it actually voiced by Robert Downey Jr.?
No, was not at all. Okay. And not Keanu Reeves.
Because that might be part of it, although if it had been, I was going to say, like, I know
These games don't have the likeness or the voice acting. I mean, that would have been a little bit too much for them. But the other thing that bugged me, and this is the same about the console, is that the weight of the ball or the angle of the ramp on the Iron Man table is off, because far too often I shoot the ball at the ramp, it goes about halfway, and then it heads back down. And, you know, that was kind of a problem with the console version, but if I'm not mistaken, it's just a little bit worse here, or, you know, it might be just the size of the 3DS screen because I don't have the same visual fidelity needed to kind of aim your shot. But you don't even get
any
points.
You need that 3DS XL.
Yeah, maybe I do. How much bigger is that? Is that going to be equivalent to the XL?
I think it's like 94% bigger screen or something like that. 90 or 94.
Fit your head inside the depth of the 3D.
Okay, I might be able to swing the table there. So, another table. I think it's Captain America. This is being really nitpicky. The outlane kickbacks. So they send the ball right towards the drain. You can nudge it a bit, but that just really doesn't seem like good design. But other than that, the four tables are really amazing, and I'm being a little nitpicky on what's a really good package. And it's nearly as good as its predecessor. It is a dollar more than the Zen Pin 3D collection, but well worth it if you're a 3DS owner and into pinball. Pretty enjoyable. I've been playing a hell of a lot more than most anything else on 3DS. The other thing, speaking of Best Buy, I wanted to briefly mention the Mad Catz Call of Duty, what's it called? Let me find the box here. Black Ops Precision Aim Controller. So I scored that. Best Buy also has, besides the At Gamer magazine, they also have a deal of the day, and you can check out, usually I find the information at Cheap Ass Gamer. So I was initially impressed with it, the design and the feel of the controller. The big hook on this one is there are two kind of recessed buttons on the back, and they allow you to engage precision, which is kind of slow motion when aiming with the thumbstick. I tried it in Call of Duty, and after an adjustment period, I found it was actually pretty effective. But my only problem with the controller, I don't know if it's just mine or all of them, it's my left trigger clicks when it's engaged, but the right stays quiet, and it gives the impression of an actual trigger, but it's on the wrong side. Most games, you know, you use the right. What's more is it kind of slows down rapid fire. So if you just turn down semi-auto, you're pressing it, you can't get as quickly. So
I think neither of the buttons are working, because when you press it, isn't it supposed to play like a real bitchin' electric guitar solo when you do it? It's like...
Wow, Hendrix. That was good. No, I didn't hear any good.
No? Okay, maybe that's...
No. Maybe a little folksy. A little... I don't know. Maybe
Eric Clapton.
Yeah, tears in heaven. Last thing I want to talk about was Cute Men. I won't waste too much time on it because...
Did you say Cute Men?
No, Cube Men. But
Cube.
They are pretty cute. What they are is these little voxel. The game uses this voxel aesthetic, kind of like 3D dot. Was it 3D dot Game Heroes?
Yes.
For the stream. So it uses that kind of voxel aesthetic to depict its variation on the tower defense genre. And so what you do is you pick, I think, from there's about seven of different types of soldiers. Some have close range SMGs. You got your mortar men, homing rockets, flamethrower, freeze rays. And then my favorite you got Medic Mike. He's the healer. And you place them around preset stops on each level. And instead of having to worry about upgrading your different soldiers, Cubemen, the hook here is it allows you to move them. So instead of worrying about, making the path for your opponent the longest as possible, you're constantly kind of maintaining and tweaking your army. And the upside of that is you don't feel like this really detached observer. Sometimes you'll set things up and different waves will go by. And you're speeding it up. You're trying to go into double and sometimes quadruple time. This time you're almost always constantly engaged. I'll give you the exception here in one moment. The other thing, so beyond the basic tower defense, there's also the skirmish mode where either an online player or the AI, you have a tower and you send out a continuous stream of attackers, which are vulnerable to the defenses that each commander places. That's probably pretty confusing, more confusing than it should have been. Anyway, it's good, but there's no real comeback. Once you get behind, once you start falling behind, you don't get enough currency in to build and things really fall apart quickly. So as such, there's just a shit ton of quitters online. The other problem, and not so much a problem, is that it occasionally can be a bit too easy. I think most tower defense games, they continually elevate both the power and kind of the army, the armor of your enemies. And this one stays the same. So one of the things I did is I left my PC on for, I left this game on for about 17 hours while Cube, aka Cute Men, it played in the background. Luckily, it's not a resource hog. It only took about 9% of my CPU. And so I earned achievements galore. But still, it's kind of relatively minor thing. Think of it as like a plaything, just one single level. But beyond that, the game, it's selling for $2 right now, well worth the price. And, especially because you can play it on almost any machine. I'm pretty sure a netbook can handle Cute Men, aka Cube Men. So
it's weird. It's weird
time
to do it
give
as...
up the girls right now for our next segment.
We'll do it.
Yeah, Blue, help us out.
You want like a guitar solo or something?
I expected you to sing a few bars of "It's Raining Men."
I'll take a pass on that one. Thank you very much.
Don't want to sing.
Yeah,
it's not that I don't want to sing. It's that I don't want to sing "It's Raining Men."
Why not?
Because if it's raining men, I'm in a heck of a lot of trouble.
The Weather Girls illustrate a really interesting point about music. Don't name your band after the one song. Like, don't tie into that one song so much, because you'll only ever have that one song. Poor Weather Girls, R.I.P.
So like the Friends band? That band?
I'll be there for you.
They were around before, Friends.
But where are they now?
Oh.
We're still playing the Friends theme.
That's right.
They go to like weddings or mitzvahs. People are like, play the Friends theme for 30 minutes.
Because that show is on somewhere in the world right now, probably in four different countries.
So and Joey is still so funny.
Yeah. Sure. Anyway, you guys ready for some trivia? Speaking
of
trivia.
Okay.
Here's Reggie.
All right. Deckheads, number one, time to test your knowledge of Magic the Gathering, Duels of the Planeswalker 2013. This is a question for Nola, can't you tell? So which isn't one of the additions to this year's iteration, Planeswalkers 2013, that is? A, a new game mode called Plane Chaser. B, manual mana tapping. C, two-headed giant. Or D, customizable land counts. Any of you guys play the Magic?
I played the one that came out a couple of years ago.
I play Magic in real life. I don't know why I'd want to play it on the computer instead of with real people.
Because it gives you a tutorial how to play it.
So do real people.
Oh, yeah.
They give you the wrong instructions and cheat, and basically you get screwed
out. They smell.
And they're rule
players. You guys are really mean.
Sage, basically what we're saying is we don't want to play with you.
Yes. I don't. You don't live near me anyway, so still, again, why would I want to play with you either? Club.
Mm-hmm. Saturday, 4:30 p.m.
I'm going to say, because all of those things were mechanics except for the two-headed giant, which kind of sounds like it's kind of out there by itself. So I'm going to say two-headed giant is not the addition.
Okay.
I think I'm going to go with plane chaser. Yeah.
Sage?
I said A.
Oh, okay. Correct answer, D. Customizable land counts.
Let me ask you this. Is two-headed giant a bullet point that they've actually put on this game advertisement?
Yes, because I'll admit I don't know what the hell it means.
Two-headed giant.
I want to learn how to play. No, honestly, I want to learn how to play Magic the Gathering because I heard it's a lot of fun, especially if you have an iPad. I heard it's really, really cool and a great time waster. But
and a two-headed giant.
Yeah, it's got one of those.
Go ahead.
You may know the Stanky Leg, the Superman, the Cupid Shuffle, or the Jerk, and know these aren't slang terms for masturbation. But did you know the rehash? Ubisoft will show you this move with the release of Just Dance Greatest Hits, which repackages a set of songs across their ubiquitous franchise, which number is not on the track list. A. Elvis Presley, Viva Las Vegas. B. Studio musicians performing that mega hit, Crazy in Love, not Beyonce. C. Maroon 5's Moves Like Jagger. Or D. The Sunlight Shakers performing Who Let the Dogs Out.
Wait, what was B? Sorry.
The studio musicians performing their mega hit, Crazy in Love.
That one.
I'm going to go with the
band Studio Musicians.
There probably is one somewhere.
Yeah.
I was thinking it would be funny if there was a company somewhere in the Netherlands called Holland Oats. Wouldn't that be funny?
Yeah, you're a man killer.
Yeah. I'm gonna say I don't know because you know they always slip in some covers. So I'll be willing to take you that they do have the studio musicians. I'm gonna go with C.
Okay. Blue, did you offer an answer?
Not yet, and I think I'm going to go with D, because whatever that band was called.
Baja Men.
Yeah, Baja. I hate to say it, but I have two of their albums on CD.
Oh, Jesus.
Wow.
I got them for about a quarter apiece, though. I got them for a quarter apiece.
Oh, that was some serious admission right there. Wow. Correct answer, C. Maroon 5, Moves Like Jagger.
Yes.
Jeremy,
I'd like to just say also that I believe that Moves Like Jagger would be a better song if it were actually about, like, the runs. I've got the Moves Like Jagger.
Wait, what was the actual answer?
Can Mick Jagger move these days? Because
he might do, but his bowel movements are probably...
Bowel movements like Jagger.
What was the actual answer?
The correct answer was Moves Like Jagger.
Wait, was your question which one is or which one is not?
Not.
Moves Like Jagger wasn't in that package?
No, that's in the next Just Dance.
Oh, I got the titles confused. Because that song definitely was involved, because that song Oops, is now soft. On my hate list because they played it all the fucking time at E3.
I didn't like that song going into E3. And it only made
if
it...
I hear that song one more time, I'm just going to straight up punch whoever is playing it in the
Sing
face.
Sing it, Blue. Sing it.
No.
You got the moves like Jagger. You got moves like Jagger. You got the moves like Jagger.
No, it's cool. So if you ever show up to E3 or if we're ever all in the same place, you know the first thing I'm going to do upon being like, oh, hey, is punch you in the face.
Oh, well, go for the stomach. Go for the stomach.
Hey, I told you.
Okay, enough violence. Let's get back on track. Number three, this week's Wii Virtual Console sees the release of Double Dragon 2 The Revenge, an NES adaptation of the 1988 arcade brawler. If you haven't taken too many punches to the head, you might just be able to identify the cartridge's publisher from the following list. Was it A, Acclaim, B, Tecmo, C, Trade West, or D, Technos Japan?
Acclaim.
Jeez.
I mean, okay.
I'll go with Jeremy.
What are you, looking at your collection, Jeremy?
I'm saying I played a lot of Double Dragon.
Wow, you did. What are the names of the brothers?
Bimmy and Jimmy Lee.
What was the first one?
Bimmy. Bimmy and Jimmy Lee, yeah.
Are you sure it's Bimmy?
You go back and check it out. It's Bimmy and Jimmy.
Was that your own personal nickname?
No, it was supposed to be Billy and Jimmy, but you go back and look, and it's
English?
Bimmy and wow. Jimmy. Yes, it is. Yep, it's Bimmy and Jimmy.
You could have schooled me on that trivia right there.
I should have schooled you. I just schooled you, Robert.
Call me Bimmy.
Bimmy.
You guys, sorry, your answers.
God, I had this cartridge when I was younger, but I traded it in. Damn it!
Yeah, that's the way the story ends.
I'll agree with Jeremy just because he just threw the damn answer out there. Yeah.
Sage,
like I said, I have no idea, so I'm gonna go with Jeremy on this one.
Yeah, Jeremy got it. Acclaim.
I did just check this out though while we were deliberating, and actually Bimmy and Jimmy Lee is from Double Dragon 3 in the opening cutscene, so I was a little bit off, but so? Bimmy and Jimmy.
Okay. So don't call me Bimmy. Number four this week, The Amazing Spider-Man exhibits developers Beanox's continued handling of the web-slinging franchise. Just how many games have the Quebec-based studio made out of everyone's favorite web crawler? A, 2, B, 3, C, 4, or D, 5? So 2, 3, 4, or 5. How many games for Beanox?
I'm going to say 3.
How many games for what?
Who?
What?
Beanox. How many Spider-Man games, Amazing Spider-Man games have they created?
But only the amazing ones.
4?
Only the amazing ones, not just Spider-Man.
Oh, no, I take that back. Just Spider-Man.
Could be what less are my that. Options? 3, 5, what?
2, 3, 4, 5, and 9,000.
9,000?
36, 24, 36.
5.
Over 9,000. I'm gonna agree with Blue. I'm going to say 3.
Correct answer, 3. Jeremy's on.
Yes! 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 Hey. Yes!
All right. Calm down, sailor. Number 5. This week sees the release of Spec Ops The Line, an FPS which draws inspiration from Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness. Obviously, developer Jaeger must have been on a pilgrimage up the Congo, as it's been a few years since the game was on a radar. Name the similar situation which happened to the Xbox version of Jaeger. Jaeger is the name of the company, and much like the Weather Girls, the name of their first game. A. The Xbox version shipped a full 2 years after the European release, quietly filling bargain bins. B. The studio went to work on Jaeger, the aerial missions, before completing their main game, causing a delay. C. Financial difficulties caused the game to be put on hiatus for 4 years, appearing close to the Xbox 360 launch. Or D, the project was quietly shelved for 3 years as the studio worked on cheap and dirty ports of portable games. The cheap and dirty.
That's
the way we like it. Give me your answers.
Oh, I was thinking A until I heard D. Ooh, damn.
C.
You late?
I'll go with A.
Okay.
I was going to say that because one of your options wasn't that everybody drank all the Jaeger, so right out of the gate, I'm a little bit shot here. Actually, I'm going to agree with Sage on C, that it was delayed for 4 years closer to the launch of the Xbox, but it's pure speculation.
And who said A?
That was me.
Blue got this one.
Yes! Yes!
There you go. Good job, guys. I think, but if you add them all up, I think Jeremy comes out ahead, if only because of Bimmy.
Woo! Bimmy and Jimmy!
Bimmy and Jimmy coming through. That Double Dragon 2 knowledge.
Oh, yeah.
So we got some questions. Mailbag.
Are any of them for me or ones that I ought to
yes.
answer? Cause, okay.
Yeah, we do.
First can we start with those because I have to go?
To the bathroom? Okay.
No, in general.
Okay. JRPG lover says, you guys joke a lot of tentacles and hentai a lot. I don't have a problem with that, but I wonder, honestly, do you find anime characters erotic? Sage.
Jesus. Do I find them erotic? When I was a teenage girl, do I find them erotic? No. When I was a teenage girl, there were a couple that I kind of like was like, oh, man, I like that guy. Look at his hair. But I have never found them to be like, I don't fantasize about porn, hentai porn or anime characters when I'm feeling sexy, so no.
Really? Anime hair was your thing?
No, but I mean, there were some characters that were definitely better looking than any of the guys I knew in real life, so it was like, ooh, neat. This anime guy looks cool.
But it was the hair, specifically.
It was the hair and the mentality.
The mentality.
But I no, I don't find them. I don't find cartoons erotic. That's weird.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. I don't understand how people get off on like the DOA, you know, photography.
Right. Yeah.
Stuff. It's just I joke around a lot, but I don't necessarily think it's sexy.
And I don't think tentacles are sexy at all. I mean, hello, did you watch Evil Dead when the tree like goes all up in the? No, that's horrific. That's not at all sexy.
See, I think for a healthy person, I think you have to be able to admit to yourself which animated or drawn characters you find attractive. And I think it's just something you have to come to terms with. Every person has to find it deep inside themselves.
But come forward.
Out
your
weather. Out yourself. Who's hot?
Two, sexy and attractive is not the same thing.
Okay. Well, Bugs Bunny has a certain sex appeal to him, you know.
Wow, that's what's up, Doc?
Or that's right. Or the original Robin Hood Disney.
Wait, was that Bugs hands. When he puts on the lipstick?
You know, I'm saying so Bugs Bunny.
He gets hot when he puts on the lipstick and does his.
Bugs Bunny has a wide, he's attractive to a wide variety of people, wide appeal. So, and
take the plushies away from Jeremy now.
Yeah.
Blue.
I
think we need your answer on this.
I'm trying to phrase it in just the right way. I guess you could say that the appeal is like seeing this and then fantasizing that they're actually real.
Really? Okay.
I can. That's kind of the best way to describe.
I don't. The appeal I can't make that connection. Like I see a character that's well drawn. There's something about that, but applying it to a real person, I don't really...
I mean, haven't you ever seen the things where they draw, like, a real-looking person who looks like an anime character with the giant eyes and it looks horrid?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that's the problem.
I mean, just like a real-life interpretation of it. You know, seeing that, fiddle around with it, you know, finding the real-world similar person to what you see in the anime or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Bless you.
Thank you.
Gesundheit.
Okay. Next question, Mighty B. Even though games make more money than some Hollywood films, not everyone I know plays games. What do you think the main thing is that's keeping gaming from getting really huge?
Price.
It is really huge.
But I guess it's huge as
well. It is huge, but it's not really mainstream, though, right?
Right.
Is it?
Yeah.
I mean,
Halo 2 and 3 launched, and they were, like, worldwide media events.
I don't think you can say it's not mainstream when, like, 19 out of 20 kids plays video games in high school.
No, not that many.
You'd be surprised. Blah, let me just spit it out here. I mean, have you ever?
Dracula.
Because the thing is, as an actual like adult with a job and those kinds of things, you can talk to anybody at your work about sports or politics or current events, but you're not going to tell them that you got this sweet ass no scope headshot in Call of Duty.
It depends on who you work with and where you work and all. I mean, how old are you?
I'm 32 years old.
Okay, so I'm 27, and a lot of the people that I end up working with or interacting with, they play video games at work. I mean, not only do they game, they, like, find ways to game at work. So I think that there might be an age, like, a generational I'm not calling you old, but I'm thinking there might be a generational difference. Like, I would never say that gaming is not mainstream. And don't get me wrong, I think that, like, indie games, obviously, are not mainstream. But like Blue said, I mean... When a new Halo game comes out, you've got like a bazillion people lined up to go get it. Like, it's pretty mainstream.
Okay, beyond the generation, let's look at gender. There's a lot of women that don't play games, and I think it's because games are just too fucking brotastic.
But here's something.
After 3 days of E3, I felt like Alex of Clockwork Orange felt forced to watch like gratuitous violence. And don't get me wrong, I'm no prude when it comes to violence, but when every game uses blood and gunplay as shorthand code for excitement, it just feels dull and it gets numbing after a while. And I think the industry's reliance on blood may produce, and I've said this before, short-term profits, but in the long run, I know plenty of people who don't game because I think the medium has a very limited range of emotions. We have, you know, for instance, science fiction. We talked about horror tonight, action games. Well, where's the equivalent of a story like The Nightmare Before Christmas? Where's chick flicks? Where's our character studies?
I think that you're being gender stereotypical. There's plenty of women that do like the blood. There's plenty of guys that don't like the blood. And on top of all of that, would you say that football's not mainstream because most women don't play football? Because that's the equivalent you're making. You're saying because a lot of women don't play, it's not mainstream.
No. I'm branching off from gender. Okay. And I'm going to, you know, there are guys that are turned off because it's just simplistic. You know, it's so simplistic. You know, how many people want to do just headshot after headshot? And I'm saying that there are, like I said, you know, different movies that transcend that. You know, male or female, many people enjoy the pre-Victorian, you know, class studies like Pride and Prejudice and Emma. And I think the only closest thing we have right now is David Cage. And no one else is really trying to transcend what we think of as a game. And what he was doing was, you know, a little bit more like cinema, and I think could appeal to people of different that aren't traditional gamers.
I agree with that, and I think that if you look at the medium of video games as you compare it to something like the medium of like Robert was saying, film, there is a much wider scope of experiences that you can have in film than you can in video games. And I think part of the reason for that is the nature of the video game experience is that you have to have some way of interacting. I mean, we have a really limited number of ways of and ultimately shooting, you boil it down to like a mouse cursor, you know, or something, you know, you move your crosshairs over something and you activate it, you click it or something. Whereas with movies or books or television, the only interface you have with that medium is to experience it and let it be fed to you. So the nature of having to interact, I mean, it's neat because I believe that video games are a more engaging medium than any of the others, but the part of the problem is, I mean, the thing that makes it so excellent is also a thing that limits its appeal to a wider audience, I think.
Like we need more SimCity. We need more Civilization. No, I think we do if we want video games. And there's nothing wrong.
When SimCity came out, I totally
was engrossed. And you learned by playing SimCity about, you know, zoning and about how a city kind of comes together without having to read things from a textbook. And it was interesting. It was compelling.
Right.
And the other thing, too, is that you can be a lot more prolific in other mediums than you can in video games. I mean, you've probably heard the expression that every time somebody makes a video game, they have to build the camera all over again. Whereas you can have an indie experience. Some kid can pick up an old-fashioned, you know, camera and go out and start filming some things and make a movie. And you just can't do that with video games. I mean, indie stuff is getting more and more prevalent, but by and large, the things that we tend to think of as video games, you know, the retail experiences, they require a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of manpower and a lot of expertise. And until we have, as a medium, until video games have a way of branching out in terms of the kinds of interfaces. I mean, that's what the Wii was all about, right?
I would say also with Hollywood before, say, you know, the camcorder, 1970s, 1980s, before that, people didn't have a means. You know, a few people had like an old, Super 8 camera in the back and things like that. But the cost of film was prohibitive. And now in this digital age, people were given, you know, kind of the tools, the means of production. Yeah. And I think maybe in gaming, once we allow people and distribute that and come up with this middleware for people, then maybe we can move into, you know, what you're talking about, where people, you know, have the ability to articulate their own ideas.
And it's making inroads. I mean, the things that are getting really popular these days are things like Angry Birds or things like Farmville. Farmville 2 is coming out.
Yep.
Things that are simple for people to experience, things where
a video game. I mean, that's like...
But it is a video game. It's interactive entertainment.
It's a game, yeah.
And that's the thing, Sage, is that we, as people who are game enthusiasts, we have to understand that... we can't have it both ways, right? Video games are either going to be a bigger, broader thing than what we have understood them to be, or they're not going to evolve. And they're going to be
okay, but then if that's true, then my first statement is correct, which is that it is mainstream. And so the idea that, like, why are movies more prevalent than video games, I think is a false question. I don't think they are. I know a lot of people that do not go to the movies and they do play video games. And I'm not talking about like five people. I know a lot of people that don't go to, like, they might turn a movie on TV, but they don't like go out of their way to go to the movies, but they easily play Angry Birds because it's on their phone. So I think the question is not
Do you consider Netflix watching movies?
Sure.
I think still a lot of people, you know, they may not go to the movies. I think that.
No, I know, but I'm just saying, like, if you, like, for every person who's watching Netflix, we should do a poll. Let's do a fucking poll. For all of you out there who watch Netflix, do you also have some sort of Angry Birds or Snake or whatever on your
you're
phone?
You're polling people on a game site. I do.
No, so send the poll out to them. I'll put it on Facebook. Okay. Put it anywhere you want. Like, I'll put it on Facebook to all the, to all the, like, grown-ups that I know. Like, I think that if we're going to go with what Jeremy's saying, which is that, like, we're counting Angry Birds and stuff as legitimate games, I think it is just...
with your methodology.
Yeah. Well, pick
any
method.
Why don't I stand outside of
a
movie theater and ask people?
Pick any method you want.
I think it's hard to argue that video games, even though they make money, which they do, they're expensive, and people who are into them are specifically into them as a hobby. The thing about movies is that there are people who are film buffs, but everybody watches movies. Everybody knows about these kinds of things, and cost is a barrier, engagement is a barrier, age is a barrier. We might just have to wait for all the old people to die off. I don't know, but I think that there are a lot of things a lot of things that we need to overcome. But I think it's getting there, and things like these smaller, more bite-sized types of games, I think they are really making inroads into that. So. Mm.
If you like what you heard, why not check out what we write? Point your browser to www.techgaming.com for the latest reviews, previews, and new release info. If you'd like our opinions on gaming, chances are you might find our take on everything else at least mildly amusing. So follow us on Twitter. I'm Robert Allen, and I am at tech_gaming. Not here tonight, Sean Kirkland, who's at Sean Nola, N-O-L-A. Sage just walked away. But she's on mute, and you can find her at Samurage, Samurage. Blue, you can find the Eric at Blue Swim, and Jeremy Lawman Lamont at Jeremy_Lamont.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so don't forget to subscribe to the Tech Gaming Podcast on iTunes. Just click on the link in the show notes. And if you like what you hear, please rate the show as well. And if you want to keep up to date with the latest happenings on Tech Gaming, be sure to like us on Facebook. And thanks for listening.
Right. Good show.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
What voice was that, Blue?
I'm not.
You're the man of 1,000 voices.
Why, thank you. You know, I'm not sure what the one that was.
Get into voice acting.